Just a couple of things before we begin tonight. Number one, Rita and I would like to ask that you remember us in your prayers, Lord willing. On Wednesday, we'll be driving back to Indiana to take our granddaughter Brooke back to her parents, but also I'm going to go back to conduct a wedding on Friday. My niece is getting married on Friday evening, and I would ask that you would keep us in your prayers, that we'd have a safe trip for that. I also would like to ask, I keep forgetting to mention it, but we also need to keep Brother Buddy Steele in our prayers. His sister is gravely ill and not doing very well. We need to remember him and his family during this time of his sister's difficulty. And we need to remember that we need to pray for one another, that we can be comforted in times of struggle here on earth. One of the things that makes heaven such a wonderful alternative is all the things that cause us pain and anguish and misery on this earth, that we know none of those things exist in heaven, and we can indeed look forward to that. Please take your Bibles out and turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. I've really enjoyed this series that I've put together on 1 Corinthians, and not because it's a great series, but because it's been a wonderful study for me to understand the problem that even the first century church faced. And yet, in these difficulties, Paul addressed them head on. And when he did, he gave not only the problem, but he also gave the remedy. In 1 Corinthians 15, we have been looking at the theme of the resurrection of Christ. Now, you would think, as we've studied this particular chapter, that that is an easy subject that we can all understand. But believe it or not, that's a controversial subject. And yet, we want to look at the conclusion of the chapter. We won't complete it tonight, but we want to make a dent in it tonight. We're looking at the glorious body, our final victory. And what we're going to look at tonight is what is going to happen at the time of the last resurrection. In this book, we have answered questions. Questions that were presented to the Apostle Paul, either written or discussed, we don't know. Evidence leans heavily that they were written to him, and he addressed these questions. In chapter number 7, we talked about the marriage question, and there are a lot of marriage questions that can be answered in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We also looked at, in chapters 8 through 10, we looked at the worshiping of meat offered to idols again. There's nothing in an idol. It wasn't wrong to eat the meat that had been offered to an idol that was sold in the marketplace. But people who had tender conscience about that, and people who would have their conscience violated by doing such, or by you doing such, we should use our liberty in a way that we don't present a stumbling block to our brethren, but yet we respect their conscience, and then we try to teach them so they can better understand. And then we dealt with, in chapters 11 through 16, we dealt with a variety of subjects. We dealt with headship. In 1 Corinthians 11, first 16 verses, we discussed the headship of man, the kind of the chain of authority that resides in the Bible, that God is the head of Christ, Christ is the head of man is the head of woman. And we looked at some first century problems that were occurring because of that. In chapter number 12, in chapter 11, 2 through 34, we looked at the Lord's Supper. They were making the Lord's Supper a common meal. They were not having the spiritual attitude and the conduct that they needed. And so Paul addressed that in how they were eating and drinking damnation to themselves because they weren't discerning the Lord's body. And a matter of fact, that is probably the only passage in the New Testament that tells us about our conduct and what God expects when we partake of that memorial supper. And then in chapters 12 through 14, we dealt with the subject of spiritual gifts, a problem that still exists today, that many people claim that they have spiritual gifts, but a close study of these three chapters will reveal that spiritual gifts have ended. They were there for a reason. They were there for a purpose. That purpose is past. That reason is past. And now spiritual gifts do not exist as they did in the first century. And so we address that. And then in chapter number 15, we have been looking at the subject of the resurrection. Now in this chapter, We have already discussed that they had accepted the gospel message and what it taught about the resurrection of Christ. They accepted, they believed, and they obeyed that Jesus lived, he died, he was buried, and he arose on the third day. Those were foundational components of the gospel of Jesus Christ. If those three things are not true, then the gospel has no power. It has no effect. It loses its credibility. We also examined that there were witnesses. In verses 5 through 8, we looked at there were witnesses. There were people who saw Jesus alive after his resurrection. And there were not just one. It was not just two. There were a number of them. And some of them were still alive at the time of the writing of this book. So you could go ask them. You could have talked to them. And they could validate that Jesus Christ indeed was resurrected from the dead. And then there were some during this time in the first century that were denying that there was any bodily resurrection at all of believers. They denied that. Well, that's not new. People still deny that today, that there's going to be any resurrection of the believers. They believe that the resurrection is not going to be one, not two, but three. And that the evil person, he's only going to be resurrected to be destroyed. But yet the Bible doesn't teach that. And then we looked at the position and where it leaves us. We looked at what happens if the resurrection is a hoax. If Jesus wasn't raised from the dead, where does that put us? It puts us in a great dilemma. Number one, it takes away the power of our message. Number two, it makes the witnesses liars. Number three, it means we're still in our sin. But the worst of case yet, it means that we have no remedy for sin and that we have no hope. And so we looked at all those things are false, of course, because the resurrection is not a hoax. And then there existed a group in Corinth of Christians in Corinth who were enthralled with the wisdom of the world. They believed that the resurrection was just a fanciful tale. It was a myth. It was legend. It really didn't happen. And so, again, they had to deal with this in the first century. Now, here's the problem that Corinth had. In the eyes of the Greeks, the body was the prison house of the soul. And the death was the release of the soul from its captivity. The resurrection of the body, therefore, was regarded to them as a calamity rather than as a blessing. And so contrary to all sound philosophy as to excite ridicule. And Mr. McGarvey uses Acts 17. And what that means is when Paul preached on Mars Hill and he preached the resurrection of Christ, it said some ridiculed him and some mocked him. To the Greeks, that was foolishness. But what we want to look at tonight is the next logical question. Once we've secured the truth that the resurrection was not a hoax, that resurrection did occur, that Jesus did arise from the dead, and that we do have hope of overcoming the grave, and we do have hope of overcoming death, and that's not something that's a myth, that's a fact. If that's true, then the next question is logical. How does it occur? What happens when the last trump sounds? What's going to happen to those who are in the grave and to those who are alive at the coming of Christ? This is the only chapter in the Bible that answers that question. No other place in the Bible could you go to get the answer to what happens when the last trump sounds. So we're going to begin tonight in verse number 35. So please take your Bibles, open them up, and we're going to read some verses together, and then we're going to try to make some sense of them. In verse 35, Paul would write, "But someone will say, how are the dead raised up? And with what body do they come? Foolish one, what you sow is not made alive unless it dies. And what you sow, you do not sow what body that shall be, but mere grain. Perhaps wheat or some other grain, but God gives it a body as he pleases, and to each seed his its own body. All flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of animals, another flesh of bird, or fish, and another of birds. There are celestial bodies. There are terrestrial bodies. But the glory of the celestial one and the glory of the terrestrial is another. There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. For one star differs from another star in glory. So also is the resurrection of the dead. The body sown in corruption is raised in incorruption. It is sown in dishonor, it is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness, it is raised in power. It is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body, and there is a spiritual body. And so it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. However, the spiritual is not first, but the natural, and afterward the spiritual. The first man was of the earth, made of dust. The second was the man. Man is the Lord from heaven. As was with the man of dust, so also are those who are made out of dust. And as is the heavenly man, so also are those who are heavenly. As we have borne the image of the man of dust, so we shall bear the image of the heavenly man. Now I want you to remember, as we begin to look at this, I want you to remember this last sentence. It's important. As we have borne the image of the man of dust. That means Adam. Adam was taken from the dust of the earth. We bear that image in our physical body. As we bear that image, we will also bear the image of the heavenly man. And the heavenly man is Jesus Christ. And that doesn't mean that we're going to become God, but we're going to become spirit. Because we have to bear that image also. So let's look at these passages and spend a few moments tonight in trying to make how we should need to understand them. First of all, how are the dead raised up? That's the question in verse 35. How will the dead be raised? This question seems to be more from the perspective of the skeptic, instead of from the perspective of inquiring about the mechanics of the doctrine of the resurrection. This question seems to be precipitated by those who are skeptical, those who do not believe in the resurrection. And so, if there is a resurrection, what body are they raised in? In other words, how is it possible? This makes no sense. It goes against all reason. And you know what? From a human standpoint, that is absolutely true. When we die, what sense does it make that that body can be resurrected? That doesn't make logical sense to us. You know why? Because we don't have the power to do it. We don't have the power to do it, yet there are men today who claim that they have the same power that those in the first century had, but those in the first century were able to raise the dead. We have a few examples, even in the New Testament, Lazarus in John chapter 11, the man that fell out of the third story window in Acts chapter 20. We have evidence that the body was raised, the physical body was raised in New Testament time by men that had the gifts of the Holy Spirit. That gift does not exist today. That gift does not exist because men do not have the power to put life back into the body once it dies. One of the greatest questions that plague mankind is, when does death occur? When does death occur in a human being? Well, many people give you many different answers. One will say when there's no longer brain wave. No more functions in your brain, that means death has occurred. No, not necessarily. When the heart stops beating. Well, maybe, but there still could be brain activity. But the real and the correct answer is, death occurs when the spirit leaves the body. When the spirit leaves the body, there's not going to be any bringing it back. There's not going to be any resurrection. There's not going to be any of this second chance. If you go into a bookstore today, and you go into the religious section, you're going to see all kinds of books written by all kinds of people of death experience. Of people who say they died, and then they were brought back to life. Now, it is true, It is true that there have been people who have died, and by the things of medicine that we can do, their heart can be shocked back into rhythm. They could get a shot of adrenaline, and their heart could start beating again, but they didn't really die. They don't die until the spirit leaves the body. The Bible says in James chapter 2, the body without the spirit is dead. Now, when the spirit leaves the body, death has occurred. Now, when that happens, and that's what's going to happen to all of us, we're all going to experience that experience when our body and spirit are going to be separated. And that's the point of death. Now, it may not be logical, it may not even be reasonable to us, but I want you to remember one thing. If God created this body out of the dust, He can raise it up into whatever body He wants to, because He has the power to do that. I don't, He does. And so it's a matter of faith. McGuigan said, "And with what manner of body do they come? Apparently some in Corinth could only see man having one type of body, a physical body." And I want to suggest to you tonight that many men still believe that. That's the only body that they can understand, the physical body. Now, is that logical? Yes. You know why? Because that's the only body we see. We have an inner spirit. We have an inner man. Can you see it? If you look in a mirror, can you see your inner spirit? Can you see it? Can you take a picture of it? No. But it exists. It's in us. It's tabernacled in this body of flesh and blood. But we can't see it. What's the only type of body that we know? What's the only type of body we understand? This body, because it's what we see with the human eye. But there is a physical body, but there is a spiritual body. Some thought the doctrine of the resurrection was ridiculous, because they imagined that such a doctrine taught that decayed corpses would come forth from the grave, a kind of religious night of the living dead. And the body falls apart, it decomposes. Can you see that coming out of the tomb? And the answer to this is not night of the living dead. We're not talking about zombies. That's not what we're talking about. Because that's not going to happen. Because the physical body, when it dies, it is dead. And it's never coming back. Let me underline that. It is never coming back in the way that it went into the grave. It is going to change. Now, this is where the difficulty comes. How is God going to resurrect someone that's been eaten by wild animals, blown to bits, cremated, buried at sea, and you fill in the blank? How's He going to do it? Let me illustrate it this way. In the religion of the Church of the Latter-day Saints, in Salt Lake City, Utah, outside the city limits, there is a cave. There is a series of caves. And in those caves, there are hundreds of thousands of microfiche records. What are those microfiche records? Those microfiche records are the records of those who have been baptized for the dead. And those are in places that are protected and sealed to give it to the Lord when He comes back so He has a record. I got news for you. The Lord doesn't need a microfiche file to know who is where and where they are. You know why this presents a problem to us? Because we look at it from human vantage point. God will be able to do it. Wherever the body lies, whether it's at the bottom of the sea, whether it's in a deep ocean, whether it was destroyed in 9/11, when those planes hit the tower and bodies were instantaneously destroyed, it doesn't matter where they exist, God is able to bring that body back in a new body. Now, you don't have to understand it. You might not even comprehend it, but it's going to happen because God said it's going to happen. And so I've been asked, well, is cremation a sin? No. It doesn't make any difference if you're cremated, if you're buried, if you're blown to bits, if you're buried at sea. None of that, you know what? None of that matters. Because that's not the most important thing. The most important thing about your physical body is how you lived in it when you lived here. That's the most important thing about it. Not how you die, not how it decomposes, not where it resides, not where it is. That's not the most important thing. The most important thing is what you did while you were in that human body. Because that's going to determine what type of resurrection you're going to have when the final resurrection comes. Whether it's going to be a resurrection to life or whether it's going to be a resurrection to damnation. That's why it's important. Another point, the foolish one. The implication is not simply that such questions suggest one to have taken leave of his senses, but that one stands as a fool in the Old Testament sense, as a person who has failed to take God into account. And that's exactly right. We need to lift our eyes beyond the human veil. And we need to look at this from God's perspective. Let me ask you a question. Does it present some difficulty to God to be able to take a body from wherever it might lie and to give it a new body? Does that seem to be some difficulty that God can't overcome? We're talking about someone who spoke everything we can see and know into existence by the word of his mouth in 6 days. We're talking about God who can hear prayer offered at any time, anywhere, in any language, on any time of the day, and he can hear and he can answer. Now, I just told you God can do that. Now ask me to explain it to you. I can't explain it to you. I just believe it because God says it. And so it doesn't present, it's not foolish because we're talking about God. This is not a difficult problem because we're not talking about man. We're talking about what God is going to do. And you know there's a statement made in Genesis 18:14 that would be well for us to remember. Is anything too hard for the Lord? You know what kind of question that is? That's a rhetorical question. You know what that means? It means to ask the question is to answer it. There is nothing that is too difficult for the Lord. What would God call that expressed belief in that God created the universe in 6 days? That the flood of Noah couldn't have been universal? That Jonah couldn't have been swallowed or survived in the belly of a sea monster? Or the virgin birth of Christ? Does human reasoning say any of those things are possible? Can we reason that in our human mind? You know what? Let there be light. That's how I can do it. God made light by just speaking it in existence. The flood was universal. There was a time when scientists fought against it. Not anymore. Now they've embraced it. Now they've embraced it. You know why? The evidence was too overwhelming that it really happened. That it wasn't a local flood. That it was a universal flood. That it covered the earth. You know why they had to accept it? How are they going to explain fossils? How did those fossils get up there in those high mountains? How did they get imprinted in that rock? How did that happen? They didn't have an answer to that. And so they embraced the universal flood. What about Jonah? Everybody thinks that's a fairy tale. Or everybody thinks that's a story like Pinocchio. No. That was a real... You know what? Jesus in Matthew 12, he quoted that story. You mean Jesus quoted a myth? A legend? He said the sign of Jonah, you'll not see the sign of Jonah is the 3 days and the three nights that the Lord will be in the heart of the earth. Just like Jonah was in the belly of the fish for 3 days and three nights. You see, that was a sign. Jesus recorded that miracle as being accurate. Now, could it happen today? Could a man live in the belly of a fish for 3 days? Not unless the Lord deemed it. Not unless the Lord did it. What about the virgin birth of Christ? I don't know if you remember, a couple years ago I told you that they took a poll among those who claimed to be Christians in Christendom, and they had two questions. Time magazine did this. They had two questions. Number one, do you believe the virgin birth of Christ as the account given in the Bible? Second question is, do you believe in the resurrection of the dead, of the biblical account of Jesus' resurrection from the dead? Now, we're not talking about atheists. We're not talking about people who don't believe in God. We're talking about people who claim to be Christian. And they were asked those two questions. What do you think the percentages were? 65% of the people that were polled did not believe in the virgin birth of Christ. If that's true, I don't know why you're Christian. Why would you dedicate your life to Jesus Christ if you don't even believe the account of His birth? But I thought that was pretty bad until I got to the resurrection. 70% denied that. 70% denied the bodily resurrection of Christ. Brethren, that's just preposterous that you would deny two biblical facts and then claim that you believe God. But you see, that's because we try to rationalize it from the human standpoint. The human mind can't comprehend all this. It's something we don't compute with because it's above our ability to understand. Now, in verse 36, the answer is to the question could be answered by an illustration from farming. He's going to use an illustration to answer their question. And you know what? I know you can understand the illustration. If you can understand the illustration, then you'll be able to understand what's going to happen at the last trump. Paul now calls a man who thus puzzles himself as a foolish one because he denies the all-powerful God can do with the human body that which he himself practically does annually with the bodies of grain, wheat, and etc. by merely availing himself to the common course of nature. What man rejects that God cannot do, man does every day of his life. And yet he denies that God can do that. Now you want to talk about foolish? That's foolish. When you sow something, it changes in some way. Doesn't it? Those of you that like to plant, garden, just because they planted a seed into the ground didn't demand that the plant which sprang up had to look exactly like the seed that they planted. They didn't believe that decomposed seeds sprang up from buried seeds. Every year they witnessed that beautiful plants had sprung up from decomposed seeds that had been buried in the ground, watered, given sunlight, and they grew into a beautiful flower, but that's not what they planted. They planted a seed in the ground, and it came up a flower. Now, how did that happen? How did that happen? They said that the physical body, that couldn't happen. But it happens every day in life, and we have evidence of it all around us. In verse 38, our current body is as a seed grown in the ground. God is the one who raises the dead. If He can create the entire universe with a word, certainly He can raise the dead and equip the resurrected body to meet His desire. Surely He has the power to do that. God has His order of things. In the realm of agriculture, it is consistent with His order. We will have a body. Now listen, this is the key. We will have a body suited to our needs according to His design order. Now, what am I saying? Later on, we're going to make this crystal clear. But this body that you see up here, this body is not equipped for eternity. It wasn't designed to be equipped for eternity. You know why I have this body? To live in this habitation. To live on the earth. To breathe this air. To breathe this oxygen. I need this body to function in this realm. That's why God created a body that is suited to this environment. When we are raised, we are going to be suited with a body that's suited to a new environment that we will live in. It's going to be different. It's going to be different because it has to be different. Why? Because we're not, you know, what is the most popular belief today in religion? The 1,000-year reign on the earth. Well, if we were going to live on the earth again, maybe we'd need this body. But we're not going to live on the earth again, so we're not going to need this body. The resurrection itself denies premillennialism. Because the resurrection says that this body is not what's coming out of the ground. Why? Because we're not going to need it. Why? Because we're not going to be here. That's why we won't need it. All flesh is not the same flesh. God has designed bodies to live in the water, to fly in the air, to survive in environments with little water, with extreme heat, and with extreme cold. Let me give you some examples. Why don't fish have wings? They live in the water. Why don't they have wings? What good would the wings do the fish? What do the fish have? They have gills. And what runs through those gills? Water. Water runs through that gills and allows them to breathe underwater. Can you and I breathe underwater? Yep, if we strap an oxygen tank at the back of our back and we get one of those mouthpieces, we can go in there and we can live under the water. But without this, this body is not equipped to live under the water. Why? That's not the environment that it was created for. Birds in the air. Why do they have wings? Because they soar. They are given in flight. What would fins help? How would fins help a bird? It is a different body because it lives in a different environment. Now, brethren, this is not rocket scientist stuff. We can understand this. God designed the body. I'll give you another example. You know one of the most amazing animals to me is a hippopotamus. You know why? Because it can do both things. It can live under the water and it can live above the water. You ever been to the zoo and they got a hippopotamus and you're looking for it and you don't see it? And all of a sudden he comes up out of the water. He's under the water. But yet he can breathe under the water, but he can only breathe for a certain amount of time. But he can also live above the water. Why? Because that's the type of body that God gave him. And so he's constructed to live in that both environments because God made his body that way. I don't know if you read about it the other day. You know giraffes, they got long necks. I think, well, that'd be real nice. You could see, you could really look around and be able to get panoramic view, but it wouldn't be too good if you went under a bridge that the bridge was too low, like what happened in Australia a few days ago, and it broke the giraffe's neck and he died. Because why? His neck was taller than under the overpass. I don't know how the driver didn't know that, but be that as it may, giraffes, they have long necks. Not all animals have long necks. What about an alligator? Most useless animal that God created. I know what he made for handbags. That's about the only thing I can think of. But anyway, they have a very thick skin. They can live under the water. And they can live above the water. And they can live under the water for a long period of time. You know what? God created them to exist in the environment that he placed them in. Matter of fact, who made them that way? Why is the bird different than the giraffe? Why is the fish different than cattle? Why are they different? Because God created them different. Because they live in different habitations. That's why we have this body. We live in this habitation. It is not limited to just one kind of flesh in the physical realm. Therefore, how then can we limit it in the spiritual realm? But you know what? And this is where we're going to stop tonight. Is it limited in the spiritual realm? What about people who are lost? What kind of body are they going to have? They're going to have the same body that the one who has the resurrection of life is going to have. You know how I know that? How long is hell? It's eternal. If it's eternal, what does that mean? That means never ending. What would happen to the human body if you subjected it to fire? What would eventually happen to it? It would burn away. But there ain't going to be any burning away in hell. You know why? You know what kind of wording the Bible uses? The worm dieth not. The fire is not quenched. There is outer darkness. There is weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. You know what that means? That means you're going to feel it. But if it's a physical body, you're not going to be able to feel it because it's going to be gone. But it ain't going to be a physical body. It's going to be a spiritual body designed to live in an eternal abode, separate and apart from God, and not in a place where you want to be. It's going to be the same body that we're going to have in the spiritual realm in heaven. But it's going to be a much different way to live than in heaven, than in hell. Now, in closing tonight, what is it about this that we can't understand? The body is designed to live in the habitation that God created it for. When the Lord comes again, everything that you know, everything that you understand, everything that your life revolves around comes to an end. No clocks, no schedules, no ailments, no sickness, no decaying. None of that exists anymore. Everything that you've grown to know is going to change. You know why? Because your habitation is going to change. It's going to change. And if your habitation changes, then your body must change. And next week, or when we get opportunity, it won't be next week because of the singing, but the next time we come together, I'm going to show you the Bible gives great detail in exactly how God's going to do it and how long it's going to take. And I'll just give you a little insight. It ain't going to take long. It's not going to take long. But if you remember if you forget everything I said tonight, I just want you to remember one thing. A lot of you grow tomatoes, watermelons, zucchini, squash. Just answer this to yourself. Is what you put in the ground is what comes out of the ground? Is the kind of seed that you put in the ground, is that when you get a plant and you get a stalk of corn or you get the zucchini or you get the tomato, does it look like the seed that you put in the ground? It doesn't, does it? It comes up in a different form, doesn't it? That's exactly what's going to happen in this body. It's going in one way, it's coming out another way. Please take your song books out and turn to the song that Brother Mel has selected as a means of encouragement. You know what, ladies and gentlemen? You got to have help to miss this stuff. All you got to do is read the text. It explains itself. I don't know what to do. I've had discussions even with members of the church that seem to have great difficulty understanding the simplicity of this, because we just, the thing I think, look at it from our advantage. We gotta not do that. We gotta look at it, this is God's doing. Whatever happens at the second coming of Christ, man's out of that. Man's completely out of that. When the last trump sounds, man's work and his input into anything is over. Everything from that point is gonna be regulated, delegated and done by God. And that's how we have to look at it. And you know what? I agree with what God told Abraham, is there anything too hard for the Lord? I don't think so. So if you're here tonight, and you're separated by God by not a problem God can't solve. He can solve that gospel. And if we remain faithful and committed to Him and follow His will and do the best we can and depend upon His grace and His mercy, we can have a home in heaven when we die. You know, there are many people wanting to live on the earth forever. I am not one of them. If that's all that God requires of me, I'd never preach another lesson. I'd never walk in the doors of another building. I don't want what's here. What here is pain, anguish, injustice, things that cause me tribulation, things that cause pain to other people, inequality. There, I could just go on and on about the things that I don't like about here. And if this is what the God was offering me, I really wouldn't want it. I want something better. And what's better does not exist here. What's better exists in another realm. That's where I want to be, and I hope that's where you want to be. And if we can help you prepare to get to that realm, we're here to do so tonight as together we stand as we sing.